Chicago and the siege of Miami. I didn't really catch the full afterglow of the 60s into the early mid 70s when I started reading a lot of American radical and liberal literature, trying to work out a political position for myself, and I think Mills shone out. He died at the age of the young age of 45 in 1962, and the area of his corpus, his body of work that I'm looking at, is between 1948, when he published New Men of Power, a book on the unions, and 62, March 62, just 50 years ago, when he died. It's a small period for a person of such influence. In 1960, in his well-known letter to the British New Left, he wrote, "The most important issue of political reflection in our time, the problem of historical agency of change, is the problem of historical agency of change, of the social and institutional means of structural change." And that issue, the how to change society, was with him for the 14, 15 years that I've indicated. But interestingly, Ralph Miliband, in 1964, in the retrospective on Mills, mentioned that, celebrated really his institutional analysis, but added his difficulty lay elsewhere in locating the means of radical change. And I guess that's where we're at today on the left, that we know pretty much what we want to change, but how to change it looks at least as difficult 60, 70 years on. So one way of reading Mills's work is this engagement with the issue of change. There's a trilogy of books which published between 48 and 56, ending in The Power Elite and beginning with the book that I've just mentioned, that really engage with the structure of American society. But there is this undercurrent of engagement with the agency of change. In The New Men of Power, he pretty much as early as that in 48 dismissed the union leadership. He saw them as increasingly embedded in the higher echelons of the power structure, not in the elite itself, but no longer strongly committed to the cause of working class equality. At this stage, I would say in 48, Mills is still thinking along not Marxist lines, but closer to, say, somebody like Braverman. There is an indication in that book that he would be happy to see some kind of coalition with the new working class, the middle class, and the blue-collar workers with progressive intellectuals involved. So that's fairly kind of conventional. By the time he wrote White Collar, published White Collar in 51, he'd lost that belief. His book on the white collar, the new middle class, particularly the lower levels of the salariat, was quite scathing. He referred to them, he had a very scathing tongue, as the rear guard. And he saw the middle class as increasingly divided between the old farmers, business people, and the upper and lower new white collar class. He didn't. So he was beginning to move to what in 56 was the power elite, an analysis of the elite and masses. He'd already really articulated a notion of the masses in those two earlier books, but it's very clearly articulated. And this distinguishes him. He always had a close relationship with Marxism, but it distinguishes him from Marxism, the fact that he arrived at an elite masses analysis. And in terms of the possible agents of change, he briefly referred to the working class, the more progressive middle class, which only a section of that was he optimistic about. He makes a brief reference to the poor in the power elite. He refers to them in some theories as a counter-elite, but he doesn't engage with that. It's just a passing reference. So he's got really pretty much a full picture a mass society. So it's not surprising that he's concerned, because it's a mass society, as he describes it, along the lines that Marcuse at the same time, over-rationalized, over-processed society, in which various possible agents of change are looking fairly pacified. By the way, he was criticised by Tom Hayden, who's been a long-term activist in the States, community organiser, for his relative lack of interest in analysing the position of the poor. His concern can be taken for granted. So he, by 56, he had a fairly pessimistic view of things, though he was enragé, he was highly committed to change, nevertheless. Just one or two references, which read as quite contemporary, about mass society. He refers to the media as the means to manage and manipulate consent. I mean, that could be something we might say now. And then in terms of his aspiration that people should link their personal troubles and the social, he says it really precisely that. People in masses are gripped by personal troubles, but they are not aware of their true meaning and source. They do not transcend by discussion, much less action, their more or less narrow lives. And he laments that that education has become functional, economic, and this resonates very much, and that it should be more political. For him, political meant thinking for yourself, engaging with the world. That's what, and he constantly asks for education to be political. In fact, he had an interesting idea in one address to college, I think of the equivalent of further education, in which he said academics should bring in people from the outside that are doing something, that have some leverage on radical activity. And address, he says, the task of liberal education should be to keep us from being overwhelmed by mass society. So all this seems to me, the language may be slightly different, but highly relevant. So by 1960, and really well before, he's reached the conclusion that certainly crude Marxism and liberalism, as he's finding it in the States, are not the philosophies of change. About liberalism, a couple of things he says. Parliamentary democracy operates at the middle level, and the elite decisions, the military, political, and economic elite, really move above the level of congressional parliamentary level. And that surely is relevant to today, to what we're looking at in terms of the way our political system works. We've seen the interlocking elites, we've seen them more clearly than ever. I mean, Cameron going riding with the Murdoch press people, so on and so on. It's very, very vivid. It is at least coming out, which is something. Mill's contrast, more as an ideal type, a second point, between the publics of the late 18th and 19th century, the more educated middle classes who were pushing for democracy, and as he sees it, the under-educated masses of now. I mean, that public's masses, it is an ideal type. He realises that both coexisted in both periods. But he's not unlike Marcuse. I haven't got time to do a comparison of them, but he's seeing them. He's quite similar in seeing one-dimensional society. One-dimensional Man is the title of Marcuse's very influential book in the 60s. Marxism, I've said enough about in terms of the time frame. Just to go back to his letter to the New Left in 1960, he says, I cannot avoid the view, this is in relation to American society, that both liberalism and socialism, that as far as the historical agency of change is concerned, it has collapsed or become more ambiguous. So far as structural change is concerned, these don't seem to be at once available and effective as our agency anymore. The problem we have to ask, though, is are we really much closer, particularly as far as the left in Britain is concerned, then and now? His look at Marxism should provoke thought, really. That may not be the... Obviously, we need an analysis of capitalism and perhaps a socialist inclination, but we need to be self-critical. I'll give myself a couple more minutes because there's a feedback element to this. By 1960, he'd reached the point where he said, well, where are we? We intellectuals of the left, this is pretty much what Marcuse was saying as well, we at least must be true to our analysis. And he did live long enough to see a few things. He saw the student movement beginning. He saw the what he called the undeveloped world beginning to become more radical. He went to Cuba. He wrote a famous book called Listen, Yankee, which I believe in Spanish ran into 500,000 copies. So he was an immensely influential figure. By this time, he was the bête noire of the American center. And he did have a scathing tongue, and he talked of crackpot realist technological idiots, and so he made enemies. But as he also made this terrific contribution to sociological literature, it's difficult to imagine certainly American sociology without Mills. Just to tie up, I think a couple of highly relevant points for now. He addressed mainly the national level, although he's beginning to realise that elites and capitalism was very, very global, and that had to be addressed. And he had a project for comparative sociology. But Parliament for him, Congress, is operating at this middle level. I think there's a lot to be thought about there. And I think as well, given that he was concerned with power. Maybe we, if it's possible to overemphasize inequality at the expense of power, possibly we do. I've been interested recently in the notion of institutional democracy. And what Sylvia Wolby hinted at yesterday, I think has some purchase on that. That, as Rudi Deutscher said, that maybe the long, hard march through the institutions may have to be an element, as well as occupying the streets in pushing for change. It's given that what Mills was saying is not so far different from what we say, but it's 60 years ago. Maybe we have to do something that's just slightly different, slightly further, and it may be democratizing many of British institutions rather than having them run dominated by the elite. That is another road. So there's two aspects there.